Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When HIV/AIDS first presented, no one knew what it was, even as it took countless lives. It took a while for the nation to notice, and almost the full 8 years of the Reagan administration for the president to acknowledge the epidemic. Through research, drugs have been developed that allow people with HIV to lead almost normal lives and treat the infection as a chronic disease. That's both good news and bad. Thanks to antivirals, those with HIV, as I said, can lead productive long lives. But those antivirals don't stop the transmission of the virus. That is still occurring. Last month, President Trump not only mentioned HIV in his State of the Union address, he announced a goal of ending the transmission of the virus in the United States by 2030, and the plan targets 50 hotspot counties around the country. Mecklenburg is one of them. An admirable goal, but is it possible? We're going to talk about that with some people on the ground in the field of HIV prevention and care. Chelsea Golden is Vice President of Operations at RAIN. That's the Regional AIDS Interfaith Network. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
She is in our Spirit Square studio along with Shannon Farah, the Executive Director of Carolina's Care Partnership. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Bernadette Moss is Prevention Coordinator for that organization. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
With us by phone, Lee Storrow, Executive Director of the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. Thanks for being here, Lee.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFA on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. You can also watch us on Facebook Live this morning. All of you heard, I'm sure, the president's goal of ending the transmission of HIV by 2030. He said it in the State of the Union message. To everybody here, I'll just go around the table very quickly. Did it surprise you? Let me start with you, Shannon.
It did surprise me since he abandoned and disbanded the AIDS task force that he had in the White House. It surprised me that we're even still on radar. So that was good news.
Chelsea.
Most definitely surprised me, considering he has shifted money away from things that support and fund prevention and care services over the course of his presidency.
Bernadette.
Same. I feel the same, that it was very surprising for me as well.
Okay. And Lee?
Yeah, I think I'll ditto everybody else. certainly a lot of the past actions of the administration have a lot of HIV activists skeptical. I think the one thing I'll note, and Shannon referenced this, reinstating the co-chairs of the president's HIV council, which the administration did a couple months ago, I think for a lot of us was a signal that this administration is at least looking at this issue differently. Which
Why? Where is this coming from?
So a couple months ago, and Shannon referenced this, a year ago, the administration completely dismantled the President's Advisory Council on HIV, which was a long-standing institution that has been part of both Republican and Democratic presidents. Certainly made a lot of activists really frustrated that he completely kicked all the members off of the committee. Around World AIDS Day in December of last year, he announced two new co-chairs of that committee and announced that they'd be meeting in March. So that served, I think, as a signal to a lot of folks that the administration was about to do something around HIV again. I think a lot of us, though, are still scratching our head about why, given the track record of this president.
So nobody really understands why this is even on his radar. Did this announcement surprise scientists and doctors who are working in the research field of this new dedication to stopping the spread of HIV?
I think so. I think researchers and doctors have the same feelings that activists did, that we were kind of off the radar and funding was moving away. So to see action moving in the right direction, as far as we're concerned, is good news. But we want to see where it ends up.
So let me ask what sounds like a ridiculous question, given the impact that HIV/AIDS has had. But how important is this goal, Chelsea?
I think it's extremely important. Specifically in the Deep South, where we're seeing a lot of the infections, the new infections, and the majority of people that are living with HIV in the United States live in the Deep South. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we still have some of the poorest health outcomes.
We're going to do a little education here today because, on the one hand, this is important. this thrust, both, and we'll talk about Mecklenburg County's thrust to do the same thing the president is trying to do. But the president's announcement of this ending HIV transmission by 2030, why is it so important when we have antivirals now that can control the infection and let people live essentially normal lives, Bernadette?
Well, I definitely feel that, you know, the impact in the Deep South, and especially in the African-American community, where there are still one in two black men who have sex with men who face the risk of getting HIV in their lifetime. And even though we have things like PrEP, which is a preventative medication to prevent the transmission of HIV, we're still seeing these statistics of one in two black men who have sex with men, one in 16 black men in general, and one in 32 black women who face the risk of getting HIV in their lifetime. So I definitely feel that we have these antiretroviral medications out there, but we still have work to do in terms of preventing the transmission. And that's the area that I focus on in my job is in prevention.
And both organizations, RAIN and the Carolinas Care Partnership, have been trying to prevent the transmission going forward of HIV. And you've been doing it for quite a while, particularly RAIN, which I think predates Carolinas Care. Am I wrong or right about that?
We actually started as Regional HIV AIDS Consortium in 1990, and I think RAIN was founded in 92.
All right. Well,
so we're close.
Then give me, it's been going on for quite a while. Give me an assessment of how you've done so far in that effort.
I think we've done well so far for our own organizations, for the funding that we've had, for the programs that we've been awarded, and the outcomes that we've been expected to meet. I think our challenge has been funding has been focused in other areas. The Northeast, the West, the California area, they get so much more funding than organizations in the Deep South. So with what we've been awarded, I think we've done a good job. I look at the people that we house and the people that we serve and the people that we get on PrEP and the people that we link to care immediately upon diagnosis and that we get virally suppressed within 2 weeks of diagnosis. We're doing a great job. I think our issue is the volume outpaces the funding.
Are you going to echo those comments?
Absolutely. I also think we would be remiss to not mention the fact that there's a lot of systemic issues in the Deep South that which coincide with racial inequity and bias and makes our work even more difficult.
So somebody wants to correct something I said at the beginning. I'm not sure I said this, but I'll read the email from Paula here. Correcting your opening comment that antivirals don't stop transmission. People living with HIV who achieve and maintain undetectable viral load by taking antivirals consistently do stop transmission. 100%. The CDC supports this. That's true?
That is true. That is true.
Undetectable equals untransmittable.
And how difficult is it to reach that undetectable level once you start taking the antivirals?
It is very easy to reach undetectable if you are not faced with the many social determinants that a lot of our clients face. So if you're wealthy, have access, if you're housed, if there's no impeding mental health or substance abuse issues, then it's as easy as popping a pill once a day. And the medication is extremely effective. The problem that we see is the population that HIV is impacting.
Mm-hmm. What about side effects? Every pill has a side effect. What about those side effects?
HIV medication side effects usually are worse for the first 2 weeks. Most people find them very manageable after that.
But there's no damage, physical damage over the years? If you have to take this for 30 or 40 or 50 years, there's no damage?
Not as much as living with untreated HIV.
Well, you could be dead if you did that, most
right.
likely. We're going to talk about this president's plan to target 50 hotspot counties around the country, but let's focus for a moment on this one, because this is one of them, Mecklenburg County. Despite all that we know about HIV and how it's transmitted, despite the toll that it takes on people's lives, despite the creation of PrEP, these drugs that you can take to avoid transmitting getting the HIV virus mm-hmm. from somebody else, Mecklenburg County is still one of the highest transmission rates, has one of the highest transmission rates of any of the counties. And these new infections are rising. Why?
One reason I always look at is housing. People engage in all kinds of behaviors in order to keep themselves housed, and that puts them at risk. People who are HIV positive and are homeless don't always have the opportunity to take their medicine or to see a doctor or to have their medicine stored correctly. Not being able to eat on a regular basis means that it's harder for you to take your medicine the way that it's supposed to be taken. So folks do a lot of things to survive. One of those things is being at risk for HIV, either through survival sex or just not being able to take medication and then spreading it to other folks.
How many of these people who are getting new transmissions of HIV are in that category versus just young people who are, for the lack of a better term, sowing their wild oats? Bernadette.
I don't have that answer. Okay. I don't know a percentage, but I would imagine that it's relatively high. I mean, because just of the risk of, just like Shannon was saying, survival sex, when you have to do certain things so that you can, you know, be housed and have food and things like that. So that makes it difficult to adhere to your medication regimen. Therefore, the transmission of HIV is significant.
As you go around the state, Lee, is the situation pretty much the same as it is in Mecklenburg?
Yeah, certainly. Mecklenburg County has the highest rate of new transmissions and the highest total number of new transmissions. But a lot of the factors that we've been talking about impact the work across the state. You know, I think something that's been embedded in everything we've talked about is the impact of stigma. There's a great deal of stigma associated with getting HIV, and a lot of judgment that people place on how they might have transmitted HIV. And I think one thing we know, if we really want to end the epidemic and approach this from a public health perspective, is we really have to step back, treat this as a medical condition, and remove the stigma, right? It really only takes one interaction for someone to become HIV positive. And there's a couple different types of interactions that can lead to a HIV positive diagnosis. If folks feel blame, if they feel stigma, if they feel judgment about how they became HIV positive, we're not supporting people to reach the health outcomes and in the epidemic the way we want to.
Is there a greater stigma with this than there is with syphilis or gonorrhea? And gonorrhea incidences are also on the rise. Is there a difference in the stigma?
Absolutely.
Why?
I think that there's still a fear embedded in a miseducation around HIV, that HIV is still a death sentence. Syphilis or gonorrhea can be cured, and then you no longer have it, whereas HIV is something that you live with for the rest of your life. And we really need not only the activists like us, but also the HIV negative community to step up and start spreading the message that it is not transmittable, so it's not so easily transmitted, and that we do have a functional cure in the powerful ARVs that we have, getting people to undetectable status, mm-hmm. having people find their status, and if negative, getting on PrEP.
Wow. If you're living with HIV, you are living with HIV, Chelsea, is that right?
Chelsea, hi.
and you were diagnosed at 21.
Yes.
At that time, did you know how this virus was spread? Did you know anything about it at all?
I did know some of the things. I also had a lot of misconceptions around HIV. I just didn't feel like it was so close to being something that I could get. I knew how it was transmitted, but I had never had any sexual transmitted disease, right. And I just didn't feel like that could happen to me.
You think that's still the case with most people? They don't think it can happen to them?
I do. I do think that's still the case, partially. I also think that it's not as scary. We're seeing the rates of minority MSM, or men who have sex with men, we're seeing those rates rise, whereas we're seeing the rates of women, specifically in North Carolina, decline, according to SASE, Southern AIDS Strategy Initiative. But I think that it's a little bit more well received in the MSM community because we've targeted so much funding and education to those communities and haven't really looked at the wider community as well.
We have to take a break. We'll talk about Mecklenburg County's efforts to stop the transmission of AIDS going forward and more about the president's plan as well in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the goal of stopping the spread of HIV. The president's plan wants to stop it by 2030. There's a plan in Mecklenburg County that we'll talk about that's also geared toward the same thing. And we're talking with this about this with Chelsea Golden, who is VP of Operations at RAIN, Shannon Farah, Executive Director of the Carolinas Care Partnership, Bernadette Moss, who is the Prevention Coordinator with that organization, and Lee Storrow, who joins us by phone from Winston-Salem, where he is the Executive Director of the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. It occurs to me, as we've been talking about, that there is a danger in talking about this to a certain degree that might be working against your efforts to stop the transmission. And that is, if you're only casually listening to this conversation, as people do when they listen to radio, you may think, well, they've got these antiretrovirals that if you take them regularly, you will reduce your viral load to zero, meaning that you cannot transmit it and you lead a normal life. If you take PrEP because you don't have HIV and you don't want to get it, that will prevent you from getting it. So what's the big deal? That is the danger in this conversation, isn't it?
Well, I think if we come from a place of fear, that we will always have the stigma attached, which is really fueling continual HIV infections. So I think taking the fear out of it and knowing that if we could get everybody to zero viral load or suppress viral load, and we could get everybody who's negative on effective biomedical treatment known as PrEP, then we would not see continued infections. And that is wonderful. The problem is the systemic issues, right, that surround people not being able to be on treatment correctly and consistently, and the uptake of PrEP in the communities where we're seeing the highest infection rates, such as the African-American and Latino communities.
Because this is not like getting the measles vaccination where you get it one time and you're done.
That's correct.
Every single day.
It's more like birth control. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right. Lee, at the center of the president's proposed plan, there is a strategy to target 48 hotspot counties around the country with the highest rates of infection, and the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and seven states. All of these states, by the way, are pretty much in the South. There are other pockets of this around the country, but most of the most intense activity is in the South. What do these places have in common, Lee?
Well, I think, certainly at a base level, right, we're talking about the counties with the highest number and rate of new transmission. I think, though, they are all facing a lot of the same barriers that we've been talking about, right? High rates of stigma. And we've also named a little bit the communities that are facing the highest rate of new transmission. That's certainly gay, bisexual, and men who have sex with men, the African-American community, the Latinx community, and the trans community. You know, so I think what's ironic and almost frustrating about a lot of folks grappling with what the president wants to do, how this plan will be implemented, is how does a president who has over and over stigmatized the communities I've just named, put laws in place that have barred their ability to access a number of services, you know, how do you really address HIV transmissions in the communities that are facing all the barriers we've been talking about, facing new transmission, with an administration who's really put these communities under attack?
Do you think he's sincere about this? I mean, it's hard to put to describe motivation to somebody, but do you think he's serious about this, or is he just putting his feet in both camps so he can say, look what I'm doing over here for these people? On the other hand, he's got his foot in the other camp saying we should get rid of transsexuals in the military, et cetera. Is he trying to have it both ways?
Yeah. Well, just to name one thing, we're strong allies with the trans community, and just specifically want to name that we as a community, I think, are trying to use the phrase transgender as opposed to transgenders. No, that's a minor distinction, but no, it's important to a lot of our friends and family. I think we have a president who is contradictory, right, who's been incredibly confusing, and I don't want to take away from the attacks he's put against our communities. So I have a lot of faith and know one of the new members of the Presidential Advisory Council. I know a number of partners who are doing the direct lobbying work on Capitol Hill and in the White House. Mm-hmm. I think we have a president who is erratic, who is confusing, who's inconsistent. And so the community is struggling, right, with how do you respond to what I believe is at some level a genuine goodwill to allocate resources to address an epidemic. And certainly because of this reality, we need to deal with that. and also grapple with all these other inconsistencies.
So since you know people on the council, I'll ask you this question, because the president was rather vague in his State of the Union message about this. And you know, it's not, the State of the Union is not the place where you lay out point-by-point proposals for policy. I mean, you can do it in broad strokes, but you can't do it in specifics. Do you know any of the specifics about how the president's plan might work?
Yeah, so the Centers for Disease Control is the administration that's going, the entity that'll be leading this initiative. They haven't put out a specific budget allocation. That's their recommendation. But the focus is expending a large amount of money in the counties you've discussed and the states with a high rural burden, with a goal of reducing transmission by 75% over the next 5 years, and then a 90% reduction in new transmissions over 10 years, with a focus on diagnosing new transmissions, responding, and then treating folks.
Is that an achievable goal, do you think?
I actually do think it's an achievable goal if the resources are there and we do the broader systems change work that a number of my other colleagues on this panel have been talking about.
So one of the things that has been brought up is the stigma here, and you've said, Chelsea, that no one wants to talk about HIV because it's linked to promiscuity and sex, and that's an uncomfortable conversation for most. And then you add to that the fact that when this disease first became known, it presented in the gay community in San Francisco and other big cities around the country, and then spread to other locations. But that was at a time when homosexuality was in the closet for most people, except in San Francisco. Today, people are pretty much out. So why is there still a stigma attached to it? And why is it still presenting mostly in that community? I'll talk to you about this, Bernadette.
I think specifically in the African American and Latino communities, there's still that stigma associated with being gay or bisexual. And I think that's just a contributing factor. Even for me, my job is going out and educating and doing testing. And oftentimes I find people who don't even want to get tested, because just getting tested, you know, oftentimes people feel like, oh, if I get tested, then that makes me gay. So there's even a reluctance to get tested just because.
And if you get tested, there's a need to get tested, and you don't want to talk about that need to get tested.
Exactly, because then it leads to that broader conversation of like, okay, where's my risk, and you know what's associated with that risk. So oftentimes people don't even want to get tested because they're like, well, that associates me with being gay. So in our initiatives to educate and test people, oftentimes we have to couple that with like other health-related things, like if I go out, like, okay, is there blood pressure check? So that we take away the stigma of being tested specifically for HIV. But if you couple that with like, okay, I'm getting my blood pressure checked and my glucose checked, like it makes it a little bit easier to
standard test.
Exactly. If we can standardize it and make it common, then it makes it a little easier.
But that's for people who have access to a physician and get a yearly physical, and in that physical they do all those pinpricks and probes and checks and things like that.
Not necessarily. Oftentimes you have to ask specifically for those tests with your physician.
Okay. But if you don't have a physician, if you don't have insurance, and that's why you don't go see a physician,
mm-hmm.
Then you're going in to have this check.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yes.
How difficult is that for most people?
In my experience, it's most people are okay with it, because like if you know that you've had some risks, then you know what the likelihood of transmission is. So oftentimes when I test people, they say, okay, well, I have these risks and I'm getting tested specific for that. But if it's like a community event, then, you know, oftentimes I have to kind of persuade people to say, okay, you know, everybody is at risk for HIV if you're sexually active. If we take away the ways in which people have sex, the fact that people are having sex puts them at risk for HIV infection. We're all at risk for it if we're sexually active.
Okay. The Carolinas Care Partnership administers the Ryan White Care Act, if I'm not mistaken. Drugs used to treat HIV are expensive. And Ryan White, the program, comes in to help those who can't afford those drugs pay for those drugs. What happens if you don't qualify for Ryan White and you don't have health insurance and you are low income? What happens to those people?
Well, these days, the Ryan White program is administered by our county health department.
Mm-hmm.
That changed a few years ago when Charlotte became a city most affected and we got a different stream of funding. But if you are low income and you don't have Ryan White, you would qualify for Ryan White if you're low income.
Isn't there a finite amount of money?
there always is a finite amount of money, but so far we've been able to make it work in our what we call the transitional grant area.
So if you need these drugs and you don't have insurance and you're low income, you can get them.
You can get them. The medication is actually paid for by a state program called the HIV Medication Assistance Program, or HMAP. And if a person needed assistance with that, their doctor or their case manager could help them get qualified and sign up for the HMAP program. And their medications will be free and mailed to them.
So there hasn't been a lot of political appetite, if I'm reading the tea leaves right, thus far for improving access to drugs and treatment. And Ryan White has been threatened in the past with its disappearance. And there is a finite amount of money in that program, and people worry about it. Occasionally, maybe it'll run out when I need it. Do you see the attitude toward this kind of thing changing with the advent of the president's plan? If he wants to get rid of transmission, he's going to have to make these drugs available, right?
Right. And I think our attitude has always been that everyone needs access to these medications. I haven't heard a lot of chatter in the community about changing resources based on the president's plan. But you know, other than people who work in HIV and people who live with HIV, there's not a lot of talk about it anyway.
We hear about people who fall through the donut hole in Medicare and Medicaid a lot. Is that the case with this? What if you're not low income? What if you don't qualify for Ryan White? How much do these, and you don't have insurance, how much do these drugs cost?
So there is a gap, right? Because Ryan White pays up to 300%, and actually the HMAP program that Shannon was talking about.
300%?
300% of federal poverty.
Okay.
So it comes out to be about $36,000 for a person of one.
A year.
$36,000 a year they can make income-wise. So if you make over 300%, you could potentially go onto the Affordable Care Act or have private insurance. Of course, at 300%, the Affordable Care Act becomes a little bit of more expensive, right? We actually at RAIN help people get on the Affordable Care Act, and our kind of sweet spot for that is between 150% of poverty and around 350%.
So I'm trying to get a handle on what this costs the average person who may or may not have health insurance, who will not qualify for Ryan White, who has to find a way to pay for these drugs. What would the drugs cost? What would the Affordable Care Act cost?
So,
do all insurance policies cover
yes.
HIV?
So all insurance policies do cover HIV meds. And co-pays are usually picked up by the pharmaceutical companies who make the medications. The problem comes in when you don't have insurance and you make about $40,000 as a person of one with no insurance, then the drugs become extremely expensive and there's limited resources.
What does that mean? What is extremely expensive?
About $1,600 a month.
A month?
Yes.
Why does it cost so much in the United States when we're giving this drug away to people in other countries for practically nothing?
Well, in the United States, we don't. We have different meds. Also, a lot of our meds
better.
They are more. They are newer. They work as well, but sometimes may have less side effects. They get you to viral suppression at a faster pace. They have what we call a lower genetic barrier to resistance. Meaning that if they miss a med or maybe one dose a week, they won't become resistant as quickly as some of the older drugs that have turned to generic drugs and are given away in other countries.
And initially, it was a cocktail of drugs, and it was
That's
very
correct.
Complicated and complex to take these drugs. You had to take them constantly throughout the day and a certain combination throughout the day. That is no longer the case. Is that right?
That is right. For about the last 15 years, they've become easier and easier and easier. And most medication regimens in the United States are one pill once a day, but they are multiple medications in that pill, so anywhere from two to four.
So the cost of prevention, I guess this is like this in any disease, the cost of prevention is a heck of a lot cheaper than
Absolutely.
The cost of treating of this. What's the cost of PrEP? If you're suggesting people get on, people who do not have HIV, who don't want to get HIV, what's the cost of the PrEP drug that you can take?
As far as I know, it's $1,500 per month. Is that accurate?
Who can afford that?
Luckily, Gilead,
is that covered by insurance? Is that covered by Ryan White? Is that covered if you want to take it and you can't? Who can afford that?
I'm pretty sure insurance covers it, but, I mean, if we look at populations who are most affected by HIV or most at risk are minorities and poor people. So obviously something like PrEP is prohibitive for those types of communities, but there are programs in Mecklenburg County that will help people either have little or no cost out of pocket to get on PrEP.
And $1,500 a month covers what? I mean, how many times a week do you have to take this drug? Is it every
day? A daily pill. It's kind of like birth control.
It's every day, forever.
Yes, as long as you want the protection against HIV infection, you take it.
Okay, I interrupted you. I'm sorry, Shannon.
I was just going to say some of the manufacturers of these medications have very generous patient assistance programs. And Mecklenburg County recently allocated some funding for PrEP clinics. So if you can't afford the doctor visits that are required and the lab tests that are required to get and stay on PrEP, it will help cover those costs.
I understand, however, that despite the fact that this PrEP actually works in most cases, not all, is that correct? Most cases,
it's
not
about 96%.
Okay. That it's the most effective method aside from not having sex.
Right. PrEP coupled with condom use is about the most effective prevention out there.
This is still vastly underused in Mecklenburg County. Is that the case in the rest of the state, Lee?
Yeah, I think that it has been hard for PrEP to get in the hands of folks who really need it most. We've seen a significantly high uptick in particularly white, Caucasian, gay, bisexual communities. But certainly, as I referenced earlier, right, if we're looking at communities of color and the trans community, those communities have not, I think, had the access to resources and have not had an uptick in PrEP the same way we've seen in the Caucasian community.
You're nodding in agreement with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Part of the Mecklenburg plan is to start a pilot PrEP project that would run for 24 months. You actually started this a year ago, so you're about a year into this. How's it working?
As far as I can tell, it's working. We make referrals to these clinics all the time. Bernadette and her colleague, Rita, when they're out doing testing, if we have someone who is at high risk and tests negative, we can make the referral to the PrEP clinic and get that person on PrEP. And no cost to them. So I think that that's a huge advantage for folks living in Mecklenburg County.
And the plan called for providing PrEP to at least 320 high-risk uninsured individuals. How do you find them? Just through the normal course of testing? Is that how you find them?
Yes, and when we talk higher risk, we're looking at, okay, men who have sex with men, folks who have multiple partners, and then if you're in a relationship with someone who's HIV positive and you want to stay negative, then PrEP is ideal for those people. So when I go out and test, I'll ask questions that give me an idea about, you know, people's risk factors, and then I can help them mitigate those risk factors, you know, via PrEP and talking about condom use and things like that.
Bernadette Moss is the prevention coordinator for Carolina's Care Partnership. She's here along with Shannon Farah, who's the executive director, Chelsea Golden with the RAIN, and Lee Storrow with the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here talking about HIV and the president's plan, as along with Mecklenburg County's plan, to end the transmission of HIV going forward. The president's calling for it by 2030, and our guest Lee Storrow said that is an achievable goal if we go through with it. Lee Storrow is on the phone with us from Winston-Salem. He's the executive director of the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. Bernadette Moss works with prevention and coordination here in Charlotte for Mecklenburg County for the Carolina Care Partnership, and I guess the Charlotte regional area, actually. Shannon Farah is the executive director of that organization, and Chelsea Golden is vice president of operations for RAIN. We have an email comment. Let's be real, they say. Donald Trump couldn't care less about HIV/AIDS. If he and conservatives wanted to rid the country of this horrific disease, they'd support Planned Parenthood instead of working to close their offices, which offer testing and education for STDs of all kinds. Is there truth in that statement, Chelsea?
Ooh, put me on the spot. I think that kind of goes back to what Lee was saying about conflicting messages. Not only does this presidents and administration kind of have other policies and actions that target in a bad way a lot of the communities that we work with and that are disproportionately impacted with HIV and AIDS, but also a lot of the national organizations and the policies that support other things that impact HIV and AIDS, like comprehensive sex education, like access to...
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, sex education. I don't know what kind of sex education we're giving out in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools or in the surrounding school counties, because this affects a lot of rural counties as well. It's not just CMS. It's a lot of rural counties in the South What kind of sex education are they getting about this? And how is sex education about this presented at colleges and universities?
Well, I know North Carolina is an abstinence-based education state, so we teach from a perspective of abstaining, which, in my personal opinion, is not effective.
But do they teach the fact how this is transmitted, and this is why you should abstain? Do they talk about it?
So let me just jump in and share some information about what the state sex education law states. The last law related to sex education passed in 2009 in North Carolina. That law is named the Healthy Youth Act. And legally, while it does require that schools should teach about abstinence as an option, it also wrote into state law that schools should be teaching about contraception use, and they should be teaching students about the range of prevention methods they can use. I think what we know is that there are particularly liberal school districts who are implementing that law really, really well, and there are more conservative rural school districts around the state that are not always effectively implementing.
And is it in those areas where they're not as effective in teaching this that the incidence of transmission is higher? Is that what those 48 counties around the country that the president has targeted have in common, the fact that they don't teach this? Or are there other factors as well?
I mean, I think it's inconsistent if you looked at the 48 counties, but certainly at a countrywide level, if you look at, I think, forward-thinking sex education laws versus ones that are a little dated, we've certainly got a very dated, backward-thinking, across the South sex education laws.
But do they teach about sexually transmitted diseases and how to prevent getting them? Do they talk about that in those classes?
So, if I may, Mike,
sure.
We run a youth program at RAIN, and we target individuals between the ages of 13 and 24. That are living with HIV. And during a lot of our support groups, the youth talk about going through high school. A lot of our youth are vertically acquired, or what we call born with HIV.
Okay.
A lot of the youth talk about sitting in those classes and feeling like, although they are taught how HIV is transmitted, how sexually transmitted infections are passed from one to another and prevented, that it comes from a very fear-based and shame-based model. So I think when we think about stigma and sex education, they really kind of propel each other. And when it comes to sex education, I think it needs to be a little bit more consistent, age appropriate. You can't do a one and done and expect to get the results. Unfortunately, a lot of our communities and our children are not having these conversations in the home setting. And so the only place they get the conversations is the internet, this one class, and from their peers.
I understand the shame-based aspect of this, because you don't want to shame people about sex, because if you do, then it stops the conversation. But I don't understand the fear aspect. The fear aspect of this is something that is tricky to me, because it is a fearful thing. You don't want to get these sexually transmitted diseases. They are scary. It does impact your life. But then again, you need to know about it. So how do you teach it in a non-fear-based way but have enough import to the people hearing you that they'll think twice before doing something irresponsible?
So before I answer that, I just want to say, as a positive woman, And I may be a little biased here, but as a positive woman, if we come at it from a place of, this is scary, you don't want this, and I'm telling you, as somebody who's living with HIV, that I can be on effective treatment and I am of no threat to you, then how does that look when we go on a date and I tell you that I'm living with HIV but I'm virally suppressed? Oh, that is bad. I don't want that. I'm scared of that. That is a lifetime. And so I think proper education and really understanding the scientific facts around HIV is where education needs to come from.
So the other impediment here, I think, if that's a good way to put it, to lessen the spread of this virus is getting the word out. And evidently, Mecklenburg County is said to lack what other major population centers have in terms of public advertising on billboards, in public transportation, social media focused at high-risk populations about testing and prevention, and we have lacked awareness efforts about the fact that PrEP, this pre-exposure prophylaxis exists. Has that changed since the Mecklenburg County plan started?
I haven't seen it change. I can tell you I was in D.C. over the summer at a conference, and at every bus stop, on every train, and every bus, there were pictures of people who, with a little sign that said, I'm on prep because, or prep works for me because. It looked like real people.
Who's paying for that?
Good question. Probably the local health department.
Okay. Why don't we do that here?
That would be a good question for our local health department. And maybe there are some plans to do so. We have, in the past, when we had a syphilis epidemic in the city, we did some syphilis advertising, got people tested and treated for syphilis. So there's a precedent for looking at specific health conditions and doing some specific advertising to
because
populations.
I will say that during the PrEP pilot meetings, they did set aside some money for marketing and they had a photo shoot. So they do have pictures ready to go. I don't know
when because clearly there's a need. But the Southeast is the epicenter of the increasing transmission or the ongoing transmission of HIV. And the Charlotte metro area is ranked among the worst 25% of metropolitan areas in the nation for new infections. Clearly, there is a need for this. I mean, when you talk to health department people, when you talk to city and county officials, do they acknowledge that? Have you talked to them about it?
Yes. So they actually recently looked at a getting to zero plan just for Mecklenburg County. So that's part of what the PrEP pilot kind of came out of, was the getting to zero plan. How in Mecklenburg County can we get to zero new infections by 2020?
That plan, the getting to zero Mecklenburg plan, describes an unwillingness or concern among Mecklenburg County's faith community to display HIV testing literature and prevention messages in their churches. Why is that?
Well, actually, we had faith members of the faith community at the table when we developed that plan. So I maybe didn't
read.
In fact,
that's a quote from the plan.
Maybe it is trying to get faith communities more involved to do that more regularly, more frequently, and more widespread.
And I think there are always faith communities who are more liberal, more progressive, and then there are some who continue to shame and stigmatize people who are HIV positive or are at risk for HIV.
Disease obviously knows no borders. So, Lee, the president's goal is to eliminate HIV transmission in the U.S. by 2030. Mecklenburg County has a zero transmission plan in place. Unless you do this nationwide, unless you do this internationally, how do you stop this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the assumption around the reduction in 5 years and 10 years and the targeting of the 49 counties is driven by some modeling done by epidemiologists at the CDC. There are, you know, I think the reality that we all sort of know is that completely end transmissions is pretty challenging, but there is a tipping point. If we can identify 90% of people living with HIV, if we can get 90% of those into care, and then 90% of those folks virally suppressed, and that's what some large cities like San Francisco have done, you really reach a critical tipping point that you just significantly reduce new transmissions. And the modeling done by the CDC and reflected in the president's plan assumes that the interventions in these high incident counties can help lead that modeling we've seen done in some really local progressive cities nationwide.
When people in the high risk populations who have been stigmatized and who don't want to come in for testing and who don't want to reveal that they're having sex with somebody perhaps who has HIV, so they don't get the PrEP. When they themselves are diagnosed with this, does it spread through their friendship group that you need to get tested, that you need to get on PrEP, or do they keep it fairly secret? You deal with these people, Bernadette.
I think it's very person specific. It's just very person specific. So because of the shame and the stigma still associated with HIV, lots of people keep their diagnosis
secret.
Quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you want to share that when
exactly.
you still have people who, if you come to my house, you can't eat off my plate. Like, I'm going to, you know, bleach and, like, clean things up because people still have an unawareness of how HIV is transmitted, not through casual contact with a person, but very specific ways. And people are still unaware of those specific ways in which HIV is transmitted.
Mm-hmm. And, Mike, if I may, when we were talking about disclosure and I said as a positive woman, the thing is that people who If I know I'm going to be treated like that, I'm not going to tell people that I'm positive. If I sleep over your house, I might not bring my meds. And so if I don't bring my meds, then I'm missing a dose. And so that's how we, when we talk about stigma and fear-based education and fear-based kind of model that we have in the South, that's how it keeps HIV propelling forward.
There was a big story this week about a man in London cured, essentially, of HIV. He was a cancer patient being treated for Hodgkin's lymphoma. They did a bone marrow replacement to fight the cancer, and the donor had a mutation, the CCR5 mutation. When the bone marrow transplant the HIV virus disappeared. This is the second time that this has happened. This is not a cure. Even the first person who's been HIV-free for about 12 years now is considered to be in deep remission because there's no clear indication that it may not come back. It may come back. This is not a cure. Could it lead to one?
It certainly is promising. Go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there's been a lot of excitement about this incident, but I think that to expect that, like, bone marrow transplants, and a number of sort of national leaders have really called out that I think there's a lot of excitement, and I don't want to deny any excitement, but this mechanism is really only appropriate for folks who are very, very sick from other means.
It's a very difficult treatment, evidently, and it's life-threatening. The treatment itself is life-threatening, so you don't want to go through this unless you absolutely have to. But is there a way to take this CCR5 mutation, which essentially blocks HIV receptors on white blood cells, and do it in a different way? Or do we know yet?
So certainly there's been some research around that. HIV can mutate and utilize another receptor once it's already in the body. Uh-huh. So in this case, in the case of the Berlin patient, they completely wiped everything out. And so in interviews with – before putting the stem cells in. So in interviews with the Berlin patient, there have been comments made that – he felt healthier with HIV, obviously not with the Hodgkin's lymphoma, but just living as an HIV-positive man than he has afterwards, after this treatment, and just been dealing with a lot more health issues since.
I mentioned the Reagan administration at the very beginning of the show. It took almost 8 years to acknowledge HIV, and that made people in the community very unhappy with the Reagan administration. And now President Trump has come forward with this initiative. And again, there are some people who are unhappy about this. Sarah Kate Ellis, president of the advocacy organization GLAAD, said President Trump once again presented a broad strokes narrative that people with HIV and AIDS, including LGBTQ Americans, simply can't trust. He's trying to do something. Is that a fair thing to say about it? Lee.
I mean, I think it reinforces the things we've been talking about from the get-go, right? I think it is really challenging for a lot of people, myself included, to give this current president grace, excitement, energy about a plan to end HIV, given the past record of what we've all dealt with for the last 2 years. At the same time, as someone charged for doing the policy and advocacy work to represent our community, to try to move this work forward to end the epidemic, I think that if we do see a major budget allocation put in the federal budget, it is our job, right, to ensure that that money is well spent and that, particularly in Mecklenburg County, it's used to the best benefit of people living with HIV to do the work to end the epidemic.
If the Mecklenburg Zero Plan is successful, if the president's plan comes into operation and it too becomes successful by 2030, what do you have to do to maintain these things, the zero transmission over the next several lifetimes of people?
We have to keep people housed. We have to keep people fed. We have to keep people clothed, educated, have jobs, and have access to the medical care and medications that are required to maintain viral suppression and prevent future transmissions.
And you get the last word. Shannon Farah, Executive Director of Carolina's Care Partnership, here with Bernadette Moss, who does prevention and coordination for them in that area. Chelsea Golden, Vice President of Operations for RAIN, and Lee Storo joined us by phone from Winston-Salem. He's the Executive Director of the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.